We're holding on Mem Aleph Amud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom. Finishing off the discussion that we started about eating the Korban Pesach Na, which we said meant half roasted or mevushal, cooked. So far what we said was, there's an issue to do either of those things. We said you're also to eat it raw, completely raw, but that there's no malchus for, because we said that, we talked about the question of lav shiva klolus, when you have a lav that includes many things, where one definition of that is when the Torah tells us that you should eat it roasted, implying, but you should only eat it roasted, implying, but not any other way, which includes any other possible way of preparing it, including also not preparing it at all and leaving it raw. You don't necessarily get malchus for that kind of iser, although it still is osir. We also talked about the idea that the isurim of na and mevushal only come in when it comes time to eat matzah, when it comes time to eat the Korban Pesach, meaning that if a person were to eat it no umuvoshol on Erev Pesach, he's not over on those lavim and it's not chayiv malchus, he's over on the eser, where it says that they should eat the meat that night, but he's not over on a lav. So finishing up that discussion, the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, ochol tzlim of oidyoim, if a person eats the Korban Pesach roasted while it's still daytime on Erev Pesach, chayiv, then he's chayiv. Now we'll see soon on what grounds is he chayiv. Because zayis no mishech hashecha chayiv. If he eats a kezayis of it after it got dark, then he's also chayiv. So the Gemara says katoni tzli dum yedino. Now the Braisa is mentioning tzli and no in the same breath, pretty much, which seems to imply man no belav af tzli belav. So implying that eating it na half roasted, there's a lav on that. We know that because it says also for men or na. But the implication seems to be that there's equally well a lav, which is chayiv malchus, for eating it roasted on Erev Pesach rather than waiting until the night. So where do we get that from? B'shleiman na, k'siv al toch l'men na. By na, the pasuk clearly says, don't eat from it, which constitutes a lav, and therefore is chayiv malchus. El tzlimen nolan, but where do we see that if he eats it roasted on Erev Pesach, where are we getting a lav from? Must be, I mean, b'chlal, where does the Torah say you're not allowed to? Is because d'chdiv v'ochlu as habasa b'alayla hazeh, because the pasuk says they should eat the meat on this night, implying b'alayla ein b'yom loy, only by night, not by day. The problem with that is, hai lav abamitzal esahu, isn't that a lav that comes from an essay? You have some places where the Torah doesn't explicitly say not to do something. The Torah says do something, and implicitly we see from that, it means don't do the opposite. So this seems to be an example of that. The Torah is telling us, do eat it by night. So the implication, it roasted. So the implication is don't eat it any time before tonight. But that's called a lava bomitol essa. That's the Torah tells us, do this. And from that, we deduce that there's something else that you shouldn't do. And b'chol lava bomitol essa. That has the status of an essa in the Torah. So you don't get malchus for such a, you don't get a malchus for such an implicit lav. So what are you telling me? That a person gets malchus for eating the Korban Pesach roasted on Erev Pesach? The answer is, Rav Chista says, this braisa would be specifically according to Rav Yehuda, where we have another example of a lava b'mikval eser, where Rav Yehuda is saying that there's a loisa say involved. The Tanya, we learn in a braisa. Now, the pasuk lists various kinds of animals that have mumim, and that you can't bring them as korbanos. And then the pasuk says, v'sher v'seh sarua v'kolut. If you have an ox or sheep, which is sarua, which means that of the various paired limbs that an animal has, one is larger than the other. So let's say, for example, Rashi says one of its eyes is larger than the other, or the same thing any other limbs that come in pairs. That's called sarua. So that's a mum. V'kolut means that its hooves are joined together. Normally you have, of course, a kosher animal has split hooves, but you can have an animal, a freak or animal is born where the hooves instead are where the two sides of the hoof are joined together. So it resembles the hoof of a horse or a donkey or whatnot. Now, such an animal is not treif from that. The fact that it has hooves like that doesn't make it treif, because it still comes, it's still a kosher species. It just has this mutation, but it is considered a mum. And the pasuk says nedava tasa. Now the expression, the pasuk is nedava tasa oiser l'neder lo yirotze. You can use it for a nedava, but not for a neder. Now what does that mean? Nidava Tasa Oisai means, now many times we have, when it comes to Korbanos, we often think of Neder and Nidava as both of them are Korbanos that are brought on the Mizbeach, but the difference is that Neder means that Neder is where you say Harei Olai Oila. For example, you say I promise to bring an Oila, so the Chiyuv is on you, and then once you designate an animal for it, if let's say that animal is lost or stolen or what have you, you still have to bring another one, as opposed to Nidava. Would be, we say, this particular animal should be an oila. But here in the pasuk, it doesn't mean, that's not the distinction between neder and nedava that we mean. We mean nedava over here means you can make it for bedek abayis. So this animal, which has a mum, you can say, this animal is worth $1,000, so I'm being makdish the value of this animal to bedek abayis. What will happen is then bedek abayis, the gizbarim, will take it and sell it and use the money towards the upkeep of the bezmikdash. Well, the neder, but to actually bring as a korban, which is brought for neder, that lo yerotze will not be acceptable. Now, the pasuk says nedava tasa oisai, you can make it a nedava. So from that we learn a miut oisai at the machdis lebedek abayis. You can only take a baal mum like that and designate that the value of it is going to go to bedek abayis. The e at the machdis tmimim lebedek abayis. But the implication is that an animal that's tumim, an animal that does not have a mum, you cannot designate like that for bedek abayis. Mikan Amru, from here the Chachamim said, Kola Makbis Tmimim Lebedek Abayis, if a person does that, if a person designates a tum animal as for Bedek Abayis, or with the Esser, then he's violating that implicit Esser in the positive, because the Torah is telling you that only a Baal Mum you can designate for Bedek Abayis, not a tumim. If you're designated as a tumim for Hekdish, then you should be designated as a Korban, rather than for Bedek Abayis. Now, Ainli Elabes, it continues the Braisa, so you only know from that he's over on an Esa, where again, a person is over on an Esa, he's not Chayav Malkus for it, for example. The Loisa Seminayin, where do we see that there's also a Loisa Se involved? Talmud Lomar, therefore the Pasuk begins that section by saying, Vaidaba Hashem El Moshe Lomar. Now, we always think of that as a Pasuk. You know, we have that Pasuk 70-odd times in the Torah. Does it really mean anything? Yes, it means something. Limud Akola Parsha Kula Sheyehei V'Loisa Se. That pasuk teaches us that everything in that parasha further on is there is a loises on it. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So says Rabbi Yehuda. Because there's lemer. One second. So my mashma. Where do we see from the word lemer that it means a lav? The answer is. I skipped a line. Amalei Rebbe Labar Kapara my mashma. So Rebbe asks about Kapara. Where do we see from the words by Dabar Hashem El Moshe lemer that there's a lav involved? Means loy ne'emar. The word lamer is short for the words lav or loy omer, meaning tell them that there's a lav. Lamer loy emer. Tell them that there's a lav. So therefore, the same thing about the Korban Pesach, at the beginning of the parasha of Korban Pesach in Parashas Bo, it also says, Vaydabash, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Val Aaron, the Eretz Mitzrayim, Lamer. So the same thing, the Lamer tells us there's a lav involved, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Dachtiv Lamer, Loi Nema B'dvarim, means among the words, there is said, tell them that there's a lav. Bei Rab Ami, in the Yeshiva of Rab, they learn differently. Lema means lav omer. So the same idea. Loi nema b'dvarim means that in the words there is said a lav, or lav emer, tell them that there's a lav. Either way, the point is, in other words, there's two ways of understanding the word lemer. Now, so what does that mean? Does that mean every single essay in the Torah there's a lav in it? You have many essays in the Torah that are introduced with Vaidaba, Hashem, Moshe, Lamer, or other such things. So there's a few explanations. Tosfos over here answers. Tosfos over here says, only when there's a lav abomikol essay. Like over here, we have the Pasuk is telling us eat it roasted on Pesach night, which we're inferring from that means, in other words, but don't eat it before that. So therefore, the Yehuda comes and tells us that there is actually a lav involved. But not necessarily. Let's say, for example, the parasha of Tzitzis. By Yom Hashem Moshe Leim, Dabar Abba Bnei Yisrael Hamatel Leim Vosalam Tzitzis. There's no implicit lav in there. There's a mitzvah. You're wearing a garment with four corners. Put Tzitzis on it. So there's no implicit lav in there. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that there's no lav in it.
Where's the lav?
So over here, because you have implicitly, since it says oisai, that only it you can be makdish to bedek abayis, implying there's some other kind of thing that you can't. Only baal mum. By mum, yeah, exactly. So and not a tum, not an animal that's tumim. So Rabbi Yehuda would say because it's introduced with lamer, that means that upgrades that implicit lava b'mikol esa, it upgrades it to an actual lav. There are a few other answers as well. There's a few other answers that Rishonim give. One of them is that maybe in fact, even Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't even necessarily say that you get malchus for it. Maybe he would just say that, maybe he'd say you get malchus maudus for it or something. Like, it's not being upgraded to a full-fledged lab, but nevertheless, there is an implicit lab in there, and the Chachamim can give you malchus maudus for it.
So the Beis Hamikdash has a lot of livestock, but they need fixing money to fixing up the...
They still can't take any tmimim and sell it for that purpose. Tmimim, once a tmimim is designated for hekdesh, then automatically it has to be brought on the mizbeach. Yeah. That's the deal.
Oh no! So if you give it for bed mess, it won't go for bed mess. It'll go.
Well, so actually, the halacha is that it'll become for the mizbeach, and it'll become for the mizbeach instead. We're actually going to learn about this in Masechet Shkalim in a few months from now. Beis Hashem, we're going to talk about these details. But yeah, the bottom line is that right now we're not focusing on what's happening to the animal itself. Right now we're focusing the person who does this is over on an essay, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, he's actually over on a lav as well. So therefore, the same thing over here, when we're saying that a person is over on a lab for eating the Korban Pesach before Pesach begins, that would be according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim wouldn't necessarily agree with that. In fact, there is actually a drasha the Gemara mentions in Yuma, a different drasha that we learned from the Pasuk by Dabar Hashem Moshe Lamer. We learn from that, if somebody tells you something, you're not allowed to repeat it over unless he gives you permission to. We also learn from the word Lamer, Loi Omer. In other words, you have no right to tell it over we're not doubting the word as Loi Omer. We're saying by Dabar Hashem Moshe Lamer to tell it over to them, implying, and if he hadn't said the word Lamer, it would mean it's only meant for Moshe's own ears. So the Chachamim over here could be disagreeing with Rabbi Yehuda and say we douse in the word lamer like that. Interesting, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Megillah, you know, you need at least 10 psukim to be lain by whenever the Torah is lain, at least 10 psukim need to be lain. And the Gemara makes a point of mentioning there that the pasuk by Dabar Hashem Moshe Lamer counts as one of the 10. So maybe that's based on these Gemaras, is that you would think, what are you learning from that pasuk? You need 10 psukim that you're actually learning something from. But we see over here that even that pasuk, you learn even that pasuk, which we usually just think there's nothing to it, but we see you're learning something.
That's only according to Rabbi Yehuda.
According to Rabbi Yehuda, you're learning that loy omer or loy nema or whatever, that there's a lab. But Chachamim, again, I'm saying we can learn from it the drasha that it says in Yuma, that unless you're explicitly told you can tell over something, then you're not allowed to. So each time the Hashem adds lamer to say, go and tell this over to Bnei Yisrael. So actually, there's an explanation also that since in these cases, the Torah makes it clear from other psukim that he's supposed to tell it over to Bnei Yisrael, so the Yehuda can say the word lamer is meant to teach us that there's a lab involved. Not necessarily would that apply. Again, Tosfos is saying over here only where there's an essay from which we derive a lab, but there's another explanation also that maybe it only applies when you have other psukim in that section that make it clear that Moshe is supposed to be telling it over to the Jewish people. All right.
What happens after it's designated as a tum, it develops a moon for whatever reason?
Well, the person was already over on an esser. What happens to it then? Fine. The value of it still can belong to Bedek Abayis. So you have, again, we're going to learn some cases about that in the Masechta Shkalim, which is the next Masechta after this one. We'll talk about the various cases where a person is makdish animals and what happens, which ones go to Bedek Abayis and which ones go to the Mizbeach.
No, but for the Korban Pesach itself.
The Korban Pesach itself, if it's a tam, you bring it. If it's a Baal Mum, then you have to, you sell it and you use the money to buy another Korban Pesach or a Korban Shlom. We're going to talk about those details in the sixth parak of our Masechta, that's the Shem.
And a tam that becomes a Baal Mum.
I'm talking about a tam that becomes a Baal Mum. You can't bring it as a Korban Pesach, obviously. You use the money of it to buy another Korban Pesach. We're going to learn about that later in our Masechta. And not the animal itself, you bring the shlomi. You use the money to buy a shlomi. But we're going to talk about those details later on in the Masechta. So wait, we'll get to those in a couple of weeks. That's okay. Onward. The Mishnah had said, Meitash Mishle Shal Nachta in Bechola. We said the water that a baker uses, for example, to cool his hands off in it or to wash his dishes or whatever. So we said you have to spill it out because otherwise it's going to become chametz. Because you have bits of dough, you have bits of flour, bits of dough in it or whatever, and it's going to become chametz. So the Gemara says, Toni Chod, the one Braisa tells us, Shrofkin B'mokim Midrin, you have to spill them out, Davka, in a place that's inclined, not flat ground, but someplace that there's a slope. The Ein Shrofkin B'mokim Ha'ish Boden, you can't pour it out in a place in where there's broken ground, where it's going to form a puddle, because then it's going to form a puddle and it's going to come from it. The Tani Edach, Shrofkin B'mokim Ha'ish Boden, another Braisa says you can pour it in such a place where the ground is broken. So how do we reconcile that? The answer is like Kasha, Hodin Efishi the Kavu. If there's a lot of water, it's going to form a puddle. It's not going to get absorbed into the ground fast enough. So then you have to do it on a slope. hard to let it fish in, to let cover. What if there's not a lot of water? It's not gonna end up making a puddle. It's gonna anyway, even if it's on broken flat ground, it's gonna get absorbed into the ground fairly quickly before it becomes hummus. So then you're fine.
It's outside.
First of all, we can be talking about it in your own rishos. But the truth is, if you're pouring it out in the street, technically yes, the rishonim talk about that if you're pouring it in the street, there might not be such an issue because it's hefker anyway. Okay. Nevertheless, it's still better if you pour it someplace where it'll get absorbed into the ground quickly. So at least it's not your chametz stick of water. That's it. Okay. Next, Amar Rav Yehuda. So here's some dinim about baking matzah and about the water that we can use. Amar Rav Yehuda, isha leitolush el b'mayim shalonu. A woman, and it doesn't just mean a woman, but of course women in those days were the ones, even nowadays, are the ones who commonly make the bread. So she should only knead the matzah with mayim shalonu, with water that was kept overnight. Now you have a vast discussion among the Rishonim what the purpose of mayim shalonu is. Rashi explains over here what it is like this. Nisan time, which is when you're baking matzah, is still the winter season. Now, we're going to have later on in our Masechta, we're going to have a discussion about where the sun is relative to the earth, different seasons of the year. And the Gemara mentions a point that during the winter time, the sun is lower in the sky, and therefore the result is that the ground and the water sources in the ground are a little bit warmer than they would otherwise be. What that means exactly, we'll talk about when we get to that Gemara, because I mean, either way, the sun is millions of miles away. How does the actual position of it in the sky affect that? But nevertheless, that's what the Gemara says over there. So Rashi says, based on that, then therefore, what it comes out is that during the winter time, in particular, the water sources, the springs and the rivers and whatnot are a little bit warmer than they would otherwise be. So you draw them and then you leave them overnight in order for them to cool off. Now you have other Rishonim who learn a little bit differently. It's not so much a matter of summer versus winter, but every night the springs are a little bit heated up by the sun, but as the sun is setting and as it's going on the other side of the world or whatever, and therefore the problem is that if you draw them at night, then they're going to be a little warmer than they would otherwise be.
If you go in the morning.
So because of all these opinions, what it is you have different possibilities. When should you be drawing the water? Should you be drawing it at night? And should he be drawing it dafka during the day and let it stay for all night? Should he be drawing maybe at night and so forth? In Shulchan Aruch, what it says is in order to satisfy all the dais, what you do is ideally you draw it bein hashmoshes, between shkia and seisach hachavim. That way it hasn't had time to get warmed up at night and it's also been cooling in the ground all day. And then you keep it overnight and you only start using it after Netzahama, and that way it's maximally cold. So that way you yoitza all the dais.
Putting it in the
refrigerator doesn't necessarily help. In fact, there is actually an idea that I think Chassam Sofer says in his Chedushim or his Atrovis or something, that's not even necessarily a matter of the temperature of the water, because you can still have, like, the outer part of the water might feel cooler, and then meanwhile in the middle, the water doesn't necessarily always mix so evenly right at the beginning, so inside it might still be a little bit warmer. So it's not always something that you could check the temperature, but whatever it is, the point is, because of these different opinions, what it says in Shulchan Aruch is you should draw the water bein hashmoshes and then keep it all night. If you can't do it exactly bein hashmoshes, then it says do it a little bit before that. Do it a little bit before Shkia, but as late in the day as possible, rather than later at night. Because once you do it at night, then you have, I think according to the Sefer Yireim, then you would have that it wouldn't work at all. Then it's already started warming up in the ground from the nighttime warming that it gets. You see, a lot of times you see those vapor coming off the rivers and whatever in the morning, and therefore that shows that they've been heated up a little bit at night. You also have other explanations of Rishonim, that it's a matter that it can also be a different, the fact that the water flows in a current might make it a little unsuitable for baking matzahs and whatever, and therefore you want it to be sitting still in one place. So yeah, like I said, there's a vast amount of discussion about the pros and cons of that, but this is where we get the concept of mayim shalom.
Even though, not as much now, but years back, water overnight, you're not supposed to use it because a worm can go inside and...
Well, you keep it closed, obviously. Right. Yeah, we're talking about you keep it closed. Obviously, you can't have a snake drink from it, but yeah, you still have. Yeah, you keep it closed and you keep it in a cool area. Yeah, and Shulchan Aruch mentions, for example, don't keep it, let's say, in a place near the oven or something. You don't want it to become warm. Yeah. We learned earlier in the paddock, you can't use warm water. Yeah, so we're going to talk about that too. Okay. Now, but of course, the word shalonu, besides that means that it stayed overnight, Meloshon Lina, also means ours. what belongs to us, like Lonu, belongs to us. So the Gemara says, Dorshu Rav Masna Rav Papunya. One time Rav Masna gave a Dorosha in Papunya, saying that you need Maim Shalonu for Matzahs, and everybody misunderstood and thought that he meant or water. Lamacho, Aisu, Kulamo, Hatzvayu. So the next day, everybody's bringing their pitchers, but also the Gabayim, they're coming to the Masna. But Omele have one Maya, and they tell him, give us water for our Matzahs, because you're telling us you need Maim Shalonu. You're saying you need or water. So that means we need dafka your water. So give us water.
Oh, yeah.
Another Maya Devisu Amri said a Masna explained to them, no, what I meant was water that was kept overnight. Now, why does the Gemara bring this story? There are a couple of interesting explanations. One of them, it teaches that, I think the Beis Yosef says, you learn from this, that b'dieved, let's say you didn't use Mayim Shalonu, you're not saying you can't bake matzah, because then he should be telling them, look, you don't have Mayim Shalonu, you don't have water that was left overnight, so I'm sorry, you can't bake matzahs today, but he isn't telling them that. But then there's a few drashadic ideas about it. One of them is we learn from this, that when you're giving a drasha to Amir Aretz, make sure you clarify what you're saying, because you see over here, they misunderstood. And then there's a vote that's brought from the Chavis Das and from Yisrael Salanter that it shows the Amunas Chachamim these people have. They have no idea why, what's any different about a Masna's water than everybody else's. But he said we need Mayim Shalanu, so they had Amunas Chachamim. Okay, then we need his water until he clarified it for them. So that shows the Amunah that they had in what Chachamim say. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Dorash Rava, Isha Leitolosh Bachama. A woman should not knead the dough for matzah under the sun. Meaning where outdoors or where the window, where the sun comes in through the window. Actually, by the way, the Rif points out also that means if it's a cloudy day, then you can't do it by a window at all, because the Gemara mentions elsewhere that when it's a cloudy day, the sun peeks in through the clouds all over the place. Yoyma di'iva kulo shimsha is the expression of the Gemara, like cloudy day, like you have sunlight everywhere because you have like a little bit here and a little bit there, instead of when there's no clouds, you have one particular place where the sun is shining and everything else is not.
So if it's cloudy, then you can get more skin.
Yeah, exactly. You get more of a sunburn. Sometimes they warn you, yeah. Okay, anyway. So you're not allowed to do that. V'loi b'chame chama, also not with water that was heated by the sun. V'loi b'mayim agrufin min amulyar, also not with water that was taken out from a mulyar. Mulyar is like a samovar. Rashi describes a big kettle made out of copper. It's hanging over the fire. It has very thick walls, so even when there's no fire, the water in it is still hot or at least lukewarm. So you can't use such water. There is a different explanation that Rishonim say that grufin also means water that was flowing. They say, okay, if you have water that was flowing in a stream or whatever, then you have a problem because, again, it gets warmed up a little bit by the fact that it's flowing. So you need to use water that was still, which is part of the reason for having Mayim Shalanu. You put it in a container and you leave it in the container overnight, and that helps take away the effect of that.
Depends when it runs through stones, it gets cold.
Yeah, but still, not necessarily, yeah. And again, we're not necessarily talking temperature. We can also be talking about other factors about the water as well. Also, the woman should not take away her hands from the oven. In other words, she should be constantly working with the dough, add to tikmas, call a pass until she finishes all the bread. Because if you leave the dough for a while, then it can become chametz. Also, when she's making the dough, this is all talking about during Pesach primarily, she needs to have two, to a certain extent, it applies before Pesach also, when you're baking matzah, but during Pesach, the halachas are even stricter, of course. So, but tzricha shnei kelim, she needs to have two containers full of water there. Achas echad shem katefes vay, one that she's going to use to baste the dough. You have, after you roll out the dough, then you take a little water, and then, like nowadays you do with challah, for example, where you baste it with egg, so you could do with the matzah, for example, you're basting it with a little water on top. We don't do that nowadays, but they used to do that in those days. But achad shem tzanenes vay sedeha, and another one that she cools her hands off with it. Because if she's going to be using water for basting it, meanwhile her hands have gotten very warmed up by working with the dough and baking it and everything, so therefore she's going to stick her hands into that same water and use it for basting the dough. It's going to be a little hotter than it should be, and again, it can make the dough become chametz faster. There's different explanations about the exact situation over here. One explanation is maybe we're only talking about if she's also baking the dough. You know, nowadays in the matzah bakeries, for example, the women who are kneading the dough are not the same ones who then put it in the oven. So in that case, their hands are not necessarily becoming so warm, so not necessarily would they need two separate kalim of water for that purpose. I mean, nowadays, again, it's a bit of a moot point. We don't baste the matzahs anyway, but yeah.
Also, this flour is in Israel. Israel is hot here, so.
You know, it's pretty much the same thing, yeah. Okay. I mean, even in Eretz Yisrael, Nissan time is still the end of the winter, so it's still, you know, it's still pretty cool usually. Okay. So now the question is, what if she was over and she did knead the dough with hot water? Mazutra ama mutter of Ashi ama aser. So we're going to talk about in a second. There are actually a few different explanations of Rishonim what the question is. Actually, let's explain now. Rashi is saying specifically the question about what happens if she uses hot water. There are a number of other, the Rosh brings over here that according to Rashi, in other words, the question would not be if you didn't use Mayim Shalom, or the question would only be about if you used hot water. Then you have, for example, the Rif, who learns that it would be also a problem that we're also talking about all these various cases. If you use hot water, if you didn't use Mayim Shalanu, if you did it, if you kneaded the dough under the sun, if you didn't have the two containers of water, et cetera, et cetera. So all of these things. And then the Rambam holds that it's that the problem which with the case we're talking about over here is primarily the things that have to do with the dough itself. For example, where the water was warm or not Mayim Shalanu or whatever, but not, let's say, for example, this part about baking under the sun. That's a side thing, sort of. So you have a few different explanations of what the Gemara's question is. So Mazutra ama mutter, Rav Ashi ama also. Mazutra says it'll still be mutter, Rav Ashi says it'll be also. Ama Mazutra manam mi'ala. So Mazutra says, where do I get that it should be mutter if you were over on one or another of these dinim? The Tanya, because we learned a few days ago, Ein loisa sin asa'ur in v'pesach. We said you can't wet the barley on Pesach, where we said you wet it in order to, you soak it in water in order to make it easier to get off the shell of it, and that way you'll get clean flour. But we said, v'im losas, if you were over and you did lasisa, nisbaku asurin, if the grains of barley split open, showing that they became chametz or they're about to become chametz, asurim, then they're also lo nisbaku mutarin. But if they didn't split open, then they're mutar. So you see that even though the chachamim tell you not to do something, says Mazutra, but if you were over and did it, as long as it didn't actually become chametz, then it's mutar. Same thing over here. For example, with the warm water or the not mayim shalanu or the sunlight, etc., depending on the different opinions of the Rishonim, if you were over on it, okay, but the fact is it didn't become chametz, so therefore it's not a problem. But Rav Ashi Yomah, but Rav Ashi answers to that, are you weaving them all together in one weaving? In other words, you can't say the gzeiros that the chachamim say not to do are not all in one thing where you always say the same rules apply to all of them. Heicha de itmar itmar, where it was explicitly said that we're not going to cancel him, then fine. The heicha de lo itmar, but where it wasn't said, then it wasn't said. Meaning, in other words, it actually says, In this case, for example, if she uses warm water and it was then it's karev l'mezid. It's very near the mezid that she shouldn't have done that. Therefore it would be usur, and therefore we would cancel because she's violating the din of the chachamim not to use warm water. So again, according to Rashi, if let's say for example we're talking about failing to use mayim shalanu, wouldn't necessarily be in this category. But some of these other things, in particular, the warm water that we're talking about, let's say when we said that she shouldn't use water that was heated up by the sun or water that came from the samovar, then if she did that, then the matzah would be also. Even that, though, Rashi is calling it korev l'mezid, implying that if it was b'shogeg, it might be mutter, and you have different opinions among the poskim, what the actual halachas are with each of these things. If you did them b'mezid, versus if you did them b'shogeg, which ones are also b'mezid, but not b'shogeg, which ones might even be mutter, even if it was b'mezid, b'dieved. Ideally, of course, you don't do any of these things. You make sure to use Mayim Shalanu that's been properly cooled off and not to do under the sun and so on and so forth. But it does talk about in Shulchan Aruch where some of these things might be most of the Dieved, some even if it was Bemezid and some only if it was Beshogeg. Hadron Alach Kolsha. The next perek, we're still going to be dealing with the dinim of chametz, but now we're going to be getting down kind of more to basics. We've been talking all this time what you do with chametz. But we have to actually define what is considered chametz as far as Pesach is concerned, and what are the and what is considered chametz stick of food and what is not, and in particular, what happens when we've talked about here and there about chametz nuksha, which is chametz that's incomplete chametz, like it's not fully edible or it hasn't fully become chametz or whatever. There's also the concept we're going to talk about tarubas chametz, foods or other things that have chametz mixed into them. So those kinds of things are going to be the subject of our perek about, among other things, to define what exactly is chametz and what is not, and therefore what is also on Pesach and what is not. And in particular, also that includes also, for example, which things are chayiv kores, which things is there only a lav on. So that's going to be what we're talking about. So the Mishnah starts off, the Elu Ovrin BePesach. The following things are Ovrin on Pesach. Now, what do we mean Ovrin? We have three explanations over here. Rashi says Ovrin as in if a person has them in his house, he's over on Bal Yiro, Bal Yimotze, meaning these are all things we're going to be describing. They are all tarubas chomets. They're all things that have a mixture, that are chomets mixed into them. And Rashi is learning that even though that's the case, that it's only a mixture of chomets, it's not chomets be'ein, nevertheless, the person is over on Bal Yiro, Bal Yimotze having it around. Tosfos brings two other explanations. Another explanation is ovrin mina olam means you have to destroy them before Pesach. So not necessarily, maybe, so because you're over on Bal Yiro, Bal Yimotze, but he learns the word ovrin as Meloshin, you have to remove them from the world. You have to destroy them. Or, of course, sell them to the goy or whatever. On the other hand, then Tosfos brings Rabbeinu Tam that says that, no, you're not over on these things. What it means overin is you're not allowed to have them on your table. You're not allowed to eat them during Pesach. But you're not over on Bal Yiro for having them on Bal Yiro, Bal Yimotze, having them around your house. Because, again, they're Tarubas Chometz, and that's what we're going to talk about today and more tomorrow, the next couple of days, about the ins and outs of Tarubas Chometz and what exactly is and isn't Osir and what level of Isser it is. So the Mishnah gives as follows. Kutach HaBadli, number one, Kutach from Babel, which Kutach is a type of dip that they had, as the Gemara is going to tell us, it was made with sour milk and right. Breadcrumbs, which often were moldy, and salt. So they use it as a dip for their food. You find it mentioned in a number of places in Chas. But the point is the breadcrumbs, it's Tarubas Chometz. In fact, the Alter Rebbe points out in Shulchan Aruch, when you get down to it, the breadcrumbs are not even in there so much in order to eat them. I mean, they're there. Obviously, you eat them as you eat the Kutach. But it's more you put them in for the flavor. And nevertheless, we're saying it's still Osir. The Shechar HaMadi, number two, beer from Madai, which we're going to learn on Amud Beis, is made with barley. The Chaymetza Adoni and vinegar from Edoim, all of these things we're going to see on Amud Beis, how they're made and what's chomets about them. The Zisoim HaMitzri. Zisoim is a type of medicinal drink made from Mitzrayim. But we're going to learn on Amud Beis the recipe for it. By the way, they say, and there are a couple of Sipur Chassidus that talk about the idea. We have mentioned over here most of the Malchias that we Jewish people have lived under. You have Mitzrayim, you have Babel, you have Madai, Paras Madai, and you have Eder. So the deeper idea behind this, when we're saying Elo Ovin Repesach, that comes Pesach, and that's the time of the Geula, and all of those Malchias are gone, and then we get out of Golus. So, yeah. The Zoyman Shotaboyim, then you have then you have Zoyman, which is, we're going to see on Amud Beis, a kind of broth used by dyers. They use it to make dye. The Amilon Shotabokim, and dough used by bakers, a certain kind of dough, which we'll see on Amud Beis what it's used for. The Koilon Shal Sofrim, and the glue used by Sofrim. We'll see on Amud Beis what that is exactly. Rabbi Lezer says also women's cosmetics. Again, we'll see in the Gemara what kind of cosmetics we're talking about and what the problem with them is. Zach, while the general rule is like this, kol shehumi min dagon, anything that contains any of the chameshas minim of grain that we learned about in the previous pedek, hareza over Pesach, then it's over on Pesach. Again, according to Rashi, it over means that the person is over on Bal Yiro, Bal Yimotze having it around. According to the two possibilities in Tosfos, either it means you have to get rid of it before Pesach, or it means you can't have it on your table. You can't be actually eating it during Pesach, but you would be allowed to have it around the house. Harei Ilavaz Hora, so all of these things, there's a warning in the Torah, there's a lab not to have them around, as we're going to learn in the Gemara called Machmetzes. The Ein Behen Mishum Kodesh, but Kodesh doesn't apply to them because they're not. So that's the thing. Either we're talking about that these things are not Chometz Gomer. Either some or all of these things in the Mishnah are maybe only Chometz Nuksha. They're incomplete Chometz or hard Chometz or something which is not really fully edible, or that it's Tarubas Chometz. And for one reason or another, then for either of those reasons, then therefore there's no kares involved. Kares would only be if a person is eating chametz be'ein, a person is eating actual chametz by itself, or mixed in with more things, with mixed in with something else, where the chametz is the majority.
Yeah. So Rabbi Eliezer argues about all.
So Rabbi Eliezer is arguing about tachshit noshim. So we'll talk about later on what exactly. So some of the Rishonim, I think the Raivan, for example, learned that there's no real argument. He's just adding another thing that the Tanakhama have left out. But there's other possibilities. One of them being, for example, that The ones that we mentioned so far are only are Tarubis chametz, but they're Tarubis of full-fledged chametz. They're made, the recipe involves that you put actual chametz in them. For example, Kurta Chababa, you put actual breadcrumbs in there. But if, let's say, it was chametz nuksha and it was al-yidei Tarubis, then maybe the chachamim would have no problem with it. And Rabbi Eliezer is adding that even though it's only chametz nuksha and it's al-yidei Tarubis, nevertheless, it's still enough to be a problem. That's another way.
That clout is coming from Rabbi Eliezer.
It's coming. Everybody agrees. I mean, everybody agrees that the kosher from in Dagon had his over Pesach. Yeah. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Turn on. Let's talk about Kurta Chababli. Shloisha Dvarim Ne'amorim B'Kurta Chababli. The Chachamim told us three things about Kurta Chababli. Mitemtem is a lev. It closes up a person's heart. Umasame is a naim, and it blinds the eyes. Umakush is a gof, and it weakens the body. So why people were eating it is a good question, but the Gemara is telling you it's not such healthy stuff. People a lot of times eat things that aren't particularly healthy.
But
the bread
that's is very healthy.
Yeah. Okay. So in what sense? The whey that's in it from the milk, in particular, yeah, but it's not whole milk. It's the whey, the liquid that comes out of milk when you make cheese out of it or whatever that goes into Kurta Chababli. That's bad for you. It blinds the eyes because of the salt, because we know there's a famous thing, melach zoynis, that can make a person blind. And here you have, you touch the salt, and then you touch your eyes, and it can harm your eyesight. And over here, there's salt in the Kurta Chababli, and I guess it could be melach zoynis, so there could be a little melach zoynis mixed in with it. So therefore, it blinds the eyes. And it weakens the body, because of the moldy bread. Because the bread, you put the bread crumbs in there to begin with, but after a while they become moldy because you keep the kutach around for a while. You don't eat kutach all in one day. You have a container of it and you use it like mayonnaise, for example. You don't use a jar of mayonnaise all in one day. So the same idea. So after a while the bread crumbs in it become moldy. Actually, there are other places where it actually seems to imply that to begin with, they put in moldy breadcrumbs. That would help make it. It would help make it more sour and more sharp. Turn it up. We learn in another brisa. Since we're talking about health advice, gimel dvarim marbin azevel. There are three kinds of foods that make a person produce more waste. Like they're not so good for the digestion. They make a person and they make a person is not able to absorb their food properly. But koifin is a koima. They make a person's height bent over. They weaken his strength, actually says. And it takes away 1/500th of a person's eyesight. Elohain, and these are as follows. Pas kibir, pumpernickel bread, the sheikha chodesh, new beer that wasn't given time to age, the yerek chai, and raw vegetables. Now, there are other places where the Gemara mentions that raw vegetables are good for you. So first of all, on the side over here, in Agoris Fitzionim, it mentions that there's another Gemara we learned in Erevin that leaves out the word chai and find that even if they're cooked, they're no good for you. Tosfos over there talks about that there's different kinds of vegetables. There are certain kinds of there are some kinds of vegetables that are bad for you, and others that are good for you. And some of them are only good for you raw, and some of them are good only cooked, etc.
Which one the guys at Sionis?
I don't know if you have it in your Gemaras over here. I have it on the bottom over here. You're different. Yeah, not all editions have it. On the other hand, we learn in a brisa, there are three things that reduce the amount of waste that a person makes. In other words, he can absorb more of them in his body. They straighten up his height. In other words, they strengthen his body. And they make his eyes shine brighter. Elohim, pas nekiya, clean bread, meaning white bread, basar shamin, fat meat, the yayin yashan, and old wine. So the Gemara defines each one of these. Pas nekiya. What do we mean by clean bread? It means the smida. Means bread made from solas, from fine flour. Basar shamin means the tzvirta delay iftach. Means meat from a goat that has never given birth. Or Rabbi Hanan also has a second explanation that tzvirta can also mean a bird that's never laid eggs. So that kind of fat meat from that is good for you. And yayin yoshan, what does it mean? Old wine means atik atiki, very old wine. Rashi says 3 years old. So those kinds of things are good for you, and they strengthen the body. The Gemara continues, as a general rule, kol mili demali lahai kosher lahai. In general, most kinds of foods that are good for one kind of thing are bad for something else. For example, Rashi says, let's say, foods that are good for your heart are bad for your eyes or for other parts of your body. or the kosher lahai malalai, and vice versa. You have things that are bad for one part of your body, but good for another part. An example of that we had back in Brachos. We talked about, for example, the Gemara had mentioned about spleen, that it's good, what was it? I think it's good for your teeth and bad for your stomach. So therefore, it's better to just chew it and then spit it out, as opposed to it mentioned some other kind of food, which is bad for your teeth and good for your stomach, so therefore you should just swallow it. So in general, most foods like that, bar mizangvila retiva, except for fresh ginger or pilpul arichta and long peppers. Now, not peppers like bell peppers or hot peppers like we have now. Those are native to America, but we mean peppercorns. You have there's the little black round pepper that they get black pepper and white pepper from. And then you have a variety of them that are longer. Instead of being bowl shaped, they're long. So those, or pasnakia, and the three that we mentioned before, clean bread, or vasa shaman, and fat meat, the yayin yashan, and old wine, or those five things, the mala, the kule gufe, those things are good for a person's entire body. Okay. Getting back to the Mishnah. So now we understand what kuta habadli is. It contains breadcrumbs, and that's the problem with it on Pesach, is that it contains chametz. Sheikhar amladi, we said the second thing in the Mishnah is beer from madai. Now, in most places, Rashi describes, in those days, they made beer out of dates. So there's no problem with chametz in it. But the problem is, in Madai, instead, the Jeromu, they made sari, they would put in it liquid from barley. So Rashi describes, like the kind that we have. Nowadays, beer is usually made from barley. In Madai, what they did is, it seems from the Lashon that Rashi is using, there's two ways of understanding Rashi. He could mean that they made beer exactly the way we do, where it's made completely out of barley malt, and nevertheless the Mishnah is not calling it chametz gomer, because it's not the actual chametz itself, it's only the liquid, it's only the malt that comes from it, which is then fermented. Or the other way, Rashi could be meaning that even in Madai, most of the beer was still made with dates, like everywhere else, but they would mix in some barley malt. So in that case, it's only Taruvas Chometz. Because remember, our Mishnah is not telling us about regular Chometz, because that, we don't need the Mishnah to be telling us. We're talking about either Taruvas Chometz or Chometz Nuksha or other kinds of incomplete Chometz. So those are two ways of understanding what we mean over here about this beer. Either that it is completely made out of barley, but it's made out of liquid from barley, and therefore it's not considered Chometz Gomer. Or the other way is that would be considered Chometz Gomer. What we mean is that it's mostly made from other ingredients, and then they mix in some barley. So they don't really, it'd only be Taruvas Chometz.
The barley was mixed in.
The barley mixed with Chometz, because the barley is fermented, yeah. Next, the Chometz HaAdoni. The next thing in the Mishnah was vinegar from Edom. What's the problem with vinegar from Edom? Vinegar in those days was usually made from wine. So, okay, you have a problem with Yain Netzach, but obviously we're not dealing with that. We're talking about Jewish wine. So what's the problem? The problem is the Shodur Beisari. They would put barley in it in order to make it ferment. Because the wine was good quality, it wouldn't turn into vinegar unless they put in barley, and then the barley would cause it to, would be a catalyst to cause it to turn into vinegar. So the Gemara tells, Omer of Nachman by Yitzchak, actually by Yitzchak, it takes out over here on the side, it should just be Rav Nachman. But Tchilak Shoyimavim Nesachim Miyehuda, originally when the Beis Mikdash was standing, they would bring Nesachim, they would bring wine to pour on the Mizbeach from Yehuda, from the southern part of Eretz Yisrael. And in the schus of that, Loihoya Yenim Shoyehuda Machmet. So therefore, in the schus of that, the wine from Yehuda was very good quality, like we had in this week's parasha, Oistri like Gechin Iro, Masarika, Binyasoina, etc. So they had very good wine. That so much that in order to make it ferment, and in order to not ferment, in order to make it go sour and turn into vinegar, they would have to put barley in it. But after the Hoyukona, it's a chomet stam. So people just called it plain chomet, vinegar. And it was understood, what you're saying vinegar, it means it came from wine, from Yehuda, which they had to put in barley in it in order to make it chomet. So then it was understood at that time, if you said that you can't have chomet on Pesach, then it would be understood why, because they put barley into it. But Achshav, nowadays, after the Churban, then it's the other way around. The wine of Yehuda is much worse quality. It will become sour even without putting in barley. So therefore, vinegar from Yehuda is not necessarily chametz nowadays. Nowadays, it's the wine from Edom that doesn't become chametz. Ad shenosim l'seichem sa'odin, unless they put barley into it. So the advantage that the wine of Yehuda had before the Churban, that advantage went to Edom after the Churban. So now we call it chomet adoni. So now, in other words, when you say, if you have regular chomet, which comes from Yehuda, then it's not chomet on Pesach, because you didn't put barley into it, it turns sour on its own. But if you have wine from Edom, where now it's good quality, and the only way to get it to become sour is to put barley in it, so they call it chomet adoni, that's the kind you can't have around on Pesach. And what Kayan Mashanema, sort of Nachman is saying, this fulfills a loshen aposik imola hacharava, where the pasuk Yecheskel describes how the city of Tsur in the north of Israel, nowadays it's in Lebanon, in those days was a big trading center. So they were very happy when Yerushalayim, when this mikdash was destroyed, they said, imola hacharava, I will be filled up from the destruction. In other words, that now that Yerushalayim is destroyed, I'll get great advantage. Because like this, up until now, you had many people are coming to your Yerushalayim to trade and to do business and whatever. So now they figured all that business will now come to us. But it also means, Rav Nachman is pointing out, you see from that also, therefore, that the advantage that your Yerushalayim had went from them to Tsur. Tsur belongs to Edom. Now, Tsur originally was settled by Canaan, but later on by Plishtim. But at some point, it came under the rule of Edom, and therefore we're saying that the advantage went from your Yerushalayim to Edom. From Yehuda to Edom. So the same way as we're saying of the Pasuk is describing how they're happy that the business, that trade will now go from Yerushalayim to them. The same way the advantage of the wine went from Eretz Yehuda to them. Which means, im maleyazu harevazu, we learn from that Yerushalayim and Tsur are always opposites. When one is full, the other one is destroyed. The maleyazu harevazu, and if the other one is full, then the other one is destroyed. It's always zelo umaseh osalikim. You can never have that Yerushalayim and Tsur are both doing well at the same time. They're either, and not just, we don't mean Tsur, the physical city of Tsur. We mean the ideas that Tsur represents and the civilization that they represent and whatever. You're always going to have either Yerushalayim and the Jewish people are on top and they're down, or chas v'shalom the other way around. Rav Nachman Yitzchak Avon Mehecha. Rav Nachman Yitzchak says, I don't even need a pasuk from Yechezkel to express that idea. We have in Chumash. Ula oim mil oim yemach. That Rivka is told about the two children in her womb, Yaakov and Esav, when one nation is going to be stronger than the other one. In other words, the same idea. When Yaakov is strong, Esav is going to be weak, and vice versa. So you see the same idea. In other words, that when Yehuda has the advantage with their wine, then Edom does not. And when Yehuda loses that advantage after the Churban, then Edom gains it. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa in this connection, a halacha that results, besides the halacha that we learned in the Mishnah about that therefore chomets ha'adomi is also on Pesach, but regular chomets is mutter. So we learn another din that has to do with this. Amr of Yehuda, Yehuda, in the territory of Yehuda, Barishona, originally, in other words, again, when the Bismuth was standing, halakeach chomets me'am ha'aretz, if a person bought vinegar from an ha'aretz, he would not have to take ma'aser from it. Now, even though you're buying from an amoret, and ma'aser may not have been taken from it, and it's vinegar after all, it comes from wine, ma'aser has to be taken, but you don't have to, says Rabbi Yehuda. If neisha chazaka, einei ba ela min ha'temed, because there's a chazaka, because the wine was such good quality, and it wouldn't just sour on its own unless you put vinegar into it, and not vinegar, unless you put barley into it, and they wouldn't usually do that. Why would you want to take good wine and put barley in it in order to make it vinegar? So what they would do is vinegar usually would come only from temed. Temed is you take the dregs of the wine and you pour water into them, and after a while the water gets the color and the taste, a little bit of the color and the taste of the wine. You use it like a cheap sort of wine. So given that temed is cheap stuff, we don't suspect that the Amoritz did so the point is, in other words, it's not so much what we don't suspect. It's considered basically water, therefore. See, water, you don't need to take truma and ma'aser from, therefore you don't need to take ma'aser from this. But nowadays, after the Churban, since the wine in Eretz Yehuda is not as good anymore, and nowadays it will become sour, and therefore vinegar can be made directly from it. So if you buy vinegar from an amaretz, you do need to take ma'aser. Because the chazaka is it comes from actual wine, which turns sour. And the wine itself would have to have ma'aser taken from it.
Again, why before, yes.
So before, because the point is, since beforehand the wine was such good quality, that the only way it's going to become sour and become vinegar is if you put barley into it. The average person is not going to bother doing that. Why would you take good wine and put barley into it in order to turn it into vinegar? You know, vinegar is worth less. Why would you do that? So instead, what you would do is you would use tamid to make vinegar. You would take the remaining dregs of the wine, you'd pour water into it, wait until the water develops the color and the flavor of the wine, then you'd set that aside to turn sour and turn into vinegar. So therefore, it's basically water, so you don't have to take mice from it. But now that they make vinegar from actual wine, then you need to. So the question is, a suburb of Yehuda Temed La Bari Sarihu. So you're telling me that Yehuda holds that Temed is not, you don't have to take Maisa from Temed. Well, Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, or actually Vatnam, really, it's actually a Mishnah. Hamitamed, if a person makes Temed, the Nosan Mayim B'midda, he put in it a certain amount of water, Umatsa Kademi Dosa, and then later on, when he comes to take the water, which now has the color and the flavor of wine, and he finds exactly the same amount, so he poured in a gallon of water, and now he's getting a gallon of Temed. Potter, so he's Potter because it's just water. Rabbi Yehuda Machayev, where Rabbi Yehuda says he's Chayev. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda does require you to take Maaser from Temed, because now that it has the color and the flavor of the wine, then it's considered wine. So according to him, why should he be potter if you're buying vinegar from an Amar that's back when the Beis Mikdash was standing? Because it's water. He holds it's not water. He holds it's considered wine. The answer is Hachi Kama. The answer is Rabbi Yehuda is not saying in the first Braisa. Rabbi Yehuda is not saying that Temed is potter from Maaser. He's saying, V'nechshiru Amei Aretz ala Temed. We don't suspect that Amei Aretz will not take Maaser from Temed because not such important stuff. It's mostly water. So therefore, what's the reason why the Amei Aretz would not give Maaser is because he's cheap, because he figures it's not so important. As long as I took Truma, that's good enough. But when it comes to Temed, which is mostly water, then he's not going to be so cheap about that. He'll go ahead and give Maaser from it, and therefore you can assume when you buy Temed from him, yes, it's Chayev and Maaser, but he himself, we can assume, will have taken Maaser.
Because
it's so cheap. Or another possibility, maybe Rabbi Yehuda does agree that, maybe Rabbi Yehuda does say that even when it comes to Temed, we would suspect Amei Aretz of not taking Maisa from it. But, like Kasha, it's still not a contradiction between the first Braisa and the Mishnah, because Hobbit the Ravka, it depends how you're making the Temed. Because you have the actual dregs themselves, which you pour the water on. So that Rabbi Yehuda would be mechayev in that, because you have actual wine that was left in the dregs that now is mixed in with the water, as opposed to habed portsini, as opposed to you have temed that can be made just by pouring water over the grape seeds that are left. Now the grape seeds, maybe they have a tiny bit of juice stuck to them, but not really enough. So when you make temed with the dregs, then you have actual wine is there in the dregs. If you were to squeeze it out, you would get out actual wine. And now that actual wine is mixed in, natural grape juice, whatever, is mixed in with the water. And therefore, that's enough to be mechayev and meiser. That's why in the Mishnah that we quoted, Rabbi Yehuda is mechayev temed and meiser. Whereas the first one, when we're talking about buying vinegar from an Amaretz, the kind of temed they would use for vinegar is the kind that they would get by pouring water over the grape pits, over the grape seeds, and that's considered basically water, therefore it's potter from Meiser.
Which one's that? Which one's
seeds? Ravka means that the dregs of the wine, Purtzini means the grape seeds, yeah. Getting back to the Mishnah, we said the Zisem HaMitzri, the Chol. We said another thing that you're not allowed to have around on Pesach is Zisem HaMitzri, so my Zisem HaMitzri, Tana Rabbi Yosef, said Rabbi Yosef, Torah Braisa, Tlosa Sairi, it's one third barley, so there's the chametz part, is the barley that fermented. Tlosa Kurtmi, one third saffron, or Tlosa Milcha, and one third salt. So that was the mixture. Rapapa Mafik Sari Ma'ayochiti, Rapapa said instead of barley, Rapapa's version of the recipe is that they would use wheat instead. So how do you remember which one said which? V'simonach sisoni. Your simon to remember which one is which is to think of a keli called sisoni, which is a kind of basket. Now the word sisoni has two samachs in it. So that helps you remember that Yosef said sari. Sari, of course, is spelled with a sin, but still it has the same sound as a samach. So it helps you remember it. Rashi gives another, Rashi's preferred girsa actually is, that they're not sisoni, but samach samach. Just remember the two letters samach that Yosef is associated with sari. Anyway, continues the Gemara. So what do they do? What do they do with these three ingredients? The barley, saffron, and salt, or according to the Papa, the wheat, saffron, and salt. Tartaru, they would soak them, that would soak them in that would soak them in water or they would soak in something together. But kolaluhu, then they would roast them together. But tachniluhu, then they would grind it up. But shosaluhu, and they would drink it. They would drink it mixed in with water or beer or something. Midivcha ba'adatzauta, between the korban, which means the korban Pesach time, and Shavuos. So in general, the Gemara mentions, we learned in Shabbos, that most medicinal drinks, that the best time of year to drink them is during Sfiras Adma, between Pesach and Shavuos. Beruchnius also, it means that's where you learn Pirkei Avos during that time, that's the best time to clean up the various Ruchnius, the sicknesses that a person has. But here the Gemara is talking also about physical ones. What is this Zisem HaMitzri accomplished if you drink it during that time? De Komit, if a person is constipated, Mirapile, it helps loosen up his bowels. Or De Rofi, and if a person is too loose, that he's having diarrhea, Mekamitle, then it helps bind him up a little bit. So it works both ways. L'choylo, L'isha Ubra, on the other hand, for somebody who's sick or for a pregnant woman, Sakante, it's dangerous for them to take it because it actually says that it makes them too diarrhea. Okay, so the point is, that's what Zisem HaMitzri is. The point is, it contains barley according to Rav Yosef, or wheat according to Rav Papa, therefore it's Taruvas Chometz. Again, it's either Taruvas Chometz, or it's Chometz Nuksha, as the case may be. Okay. Next, we said
Nuksha means hard.
Nuksha literally means hard. So Chometz Nuksha means anything which is Chometz, but it's either the Chimutz process hasn't fully completed, or it's not edible. So like this, I mean, it is edible, but it's not something that you drink normally. It's something you drink for medicine. So therefore, it could be that, or it could be it's real chametz, but it's taruvas chametz. It's chametz mixed in to a larger thing. Well, you don't know, the chametz is not the roi. We're saying the chametz is only 1/3 of it over here. Yeah. Okay. Then we said the zoyman shal tzaboyim chola. We said the zoyman, which is a kind of liquid that dyers use. So what is that? Hocha tagimu mayi b'chivri, here in Babel. They translated it that it means water in which bran was soaked, that sabi vohu laba, or laka, really, it's supposed to be, that they use it for dyeing leather. So they use it to make a red dye for dyeing leather. So the point is, in other words, that bran was soaked in it. So again, it's taruvas chometz. Next, the amilan shel tabachim chola, we said the dough that's used by bakers. So what is that? Past you take dough made from grain that has not grown 1/3 of its growth, so it's very unripe grain. They grind it and they make it into flour and they make a dough out of it. The cook puts it on top of the pot, and it absorbs all of the froth and all the bad smell and whatever from the pot, and that way the food comes out much cleaner. Okay, so it's something that they use. The point is that, again, it's not real chametz in a sense, but it's made from such unripe grain. But nevertheless, it's also to have it around on Pesach, because the fact that it is from grain that was made into dough. Yeah. Then we said the kolon shel sofrim chola. We said the kolon of sofrim. So what is that? Hocha taguma, here in Babel. They explain it means perura de ushkapi. It means the glue that's used by shoemakers. Now we're going to ask too. So in that case, why we call it kolon shel sofrim? But the point is glue. Now glue. You put in it flour. Rashi describes you put in it, for example, oat flour in order to make it sticky. You have, for example, nowadays you have some kinds of glue. Many kinds of glue nowadays are made from various artificial chemicals. But you have some that are actually made from grain, because after all, the flour contains gluten and it's gluey, sticky stuff. So therefore, they can make glue out of it. And you actually have another example nowadays is Play-Doh. Play-Doh is basically dough with a little bit of coloring that I added. Yeah. So Play-Doh is actually chametz. Yeah. So hocha taguma peruda de ushkifi. So here in Babel they explain it means glue used by shoemakers, where this glue, as Rashi is describing, contains in it oat flour. Rav Shimi Mechozna, so the different explanation, Zeti Pulon Shal Bnois Ashirim Shemeshiris Osil of Bnois Aniyim. It means the stuff that rich girls use in order to get rid of unwanted hair, and they leave some of it over for poor girls. Now, Sofrim, one of the meanings of Sofrim in the Gemara means teachers, means Melamdim. Melamdim, then as now, usually are poor. So therefore, kolon shel sofrim means it's used by the daughters of the sofrim as a beauty treatment. Now, the point is, in other words, it's made from flour, as the Gemara is going to say, later on. So they made them from flour. So like this, the rich girls use it, and then some of it is left over for the poor girls. And therefore it's called kol until sefer. Why we're focusing on the part that's left over, there's a few different explanations. First of all, Tosfos actually mentioned, now we had in the Mishnah, Rabbi Eliezer had mentioned women's cosmetics, and the Gemara is going to explain that we're talking about the same kind of thing, a flour mixture that they use to remove unwanted hair. So what's the difference between that and this? So Tosfos gives an answer. Here we're talking about where they use it, for example, to remove hair on their face or their temples or whatever that they don't want. Later on, Rabbi Eliezer is talking about the kind that they use lower down on their body. So that kind becomes much more disgusting. So therefore, the Chachamim in the Mishnah say nobody in their right mind would eat such stuff. Therefore, you can't even consider it chametz. Whereas Rabbi Eliezer is machmir and says even that. There's a few other explanations. One of them,
It's
hanah shaloka d'arta, though. It's hanah not in the usual way.
It's made from a certain flour.
Yeah, but that's not the usual way of using flour, is not to use it as a paste like that. But there's a few other explanations. One explanation being that the rich girls use it almost exclusively flour. So by then, for sure, it's hummus, there's no question. Once the poor girls get a hold of it, they put in a lot of lime into it. They mix in a lot of plaster into it, and then, so it's mostly plaster and only a little bit of hummus, so therefore it's only powder of hummus. So the Gemara says, Amy, is that so? If you're telling me that's cosmetics that these girls use, V'atana Rav Chiya summarized the seven things that we listed in our Mishnah, Arba Mini Medina, four things that are used throughout the country, meaning everybody uses them, whether they're professionals or not, or Shlosha Mini Omnus, and three that are used only by professionals. For example, let's say we said the Zoyman Chatzaboyim is used only by dyers, the Amrilan Chatzabachim is used only by cooks, etc. So therefore, the e amati pulum shall benois ashridim. Now, if you say it means the cosmetic paste that rich girls use, my nine umnas nika, that's not something that only professionals use. So therefore, you'd have five things that are used by the Medina and only two that are used by professionals. So the Gemara says, the elamai perurid rushkafi. So you're going to tell me that what? We're going to go back to the original explanation that it means glue that's used by shoemakers. Am I like kurile high kurile shall soifim? Then why are we calling it the kurile, the glue of soifim? Kurile shall ratzanin, by the way. We should be calling it the glue of shoemakers. The answer is, amar aboshi ala olam perurid rushkafi. It does in fact mean glue used by shoemakers. My kodalik kolon shall sofrim. So why do we call it the kolon, the glue of sofrim? The sofrim nami medabkin mahuniyore sehim. Because as a matter of fact, it's not just shoemakers. Sofrim also use it in order to stick their papers, their papyrus together. In those days, they didn't have paper like we have nowadays. That was only invented later. They used in those times, if they weren't going to use parchment, they used papyrus, which is made from strips of the papyrus plant that are put next to each other and then glued together to make a sheet or to make a roll. So the glue that they would use is the same glue that the shoemakers would use for making shoes. And in both cases, the point is that they mixed in oat flour with it. So we're saying that's taru of a chametz, and therefore you can't have it around on Pesach. And then we said Rabbi Eliezer had also said women's cosmetics. So I'm going to ask shitting noshim, stop that. What do you mean women's cosmetics? Women's cosmetics usually means things that usually means things like the samim or eyeshadow or lipstick or whatever, those kinds of things. There's no chametz in those. And nowadays there can be chametz in them, but in those times the recipes they used didn't involve chametz. So the answer is you have to correct the wording that Rabbi Eliezer is saying and say it means also the paste that women use to remove hair. Jewish girls who reached maturity, meaning they're starting to develop hair as if they were already of age for that, but they didn't actually reach
12.
They didn't actually reach 12 yet. So Rashi describes they're embarrassed. They have hair already. They have, let's say, for example, Shtei Cyrus or more than that, and they're not yet 12, and they're embarrassed that they're already looking like that. I guess in the bathhouse or whatever, people would notice. So it could also mean maybe they're developing hair on their face or in other places on their head where they don't want it, whatever. There's a different gears actually. Hagoris Habach takes out the word Lashonim because Rashi explains in Masechta Shabbos, we have this line also that what it means is, Tosfos actually I think explains over there, what it means is, Higiu v'loy higiu, means they're almost at the age of getting married, but not quite yet. So therefore, like they're going to be going out on Shidduchim, they want to look nice. So therefore, so they need to remove this unwanted hair. Benos aniyim tofles osin basid. Poor girls spread plaster or lime on it, and that helps make the hair fall off. Like nowadays, you have, similar to nowadays, you have like women put mud packs or whatever on their faces, similar idea. Benos dashirim tofles osin basolas. Richer girls would use fine flour mixed with water to make a paste, and again, it would get off the hair. Benos malachim b'shemen amur. King's daughters, princesses, would use shemen amur, would use oil of myrrh. Myrrh is, we have in the ingredients of the Torah, myrrh here. There's two opinions among the Rishonim, what it is. The Rambam and some other Rishonim learn that it's what's called in English musk, which comes from a gland in an animal. And a number of other Rishonim learn that it's a plant, that's something called in English myrrh, which comes from it's a sap from a certain plant. Whatever it is, it's fragrant stuff. So rich girls, but princesses use that. Shenema, as we find by Achashverosh and the Megillah, Shisha Chadashim, the Shemen Amur, they had the women over there who were brought for the beauty contest are being treated for 6 months with Shemen Amur. So my Shemen Amur, what does Shemen Amur actually mean? Rav Huna Bar Yirmi, almost stacked. It means it was stacked or sapkas or whatever. So Rashi says over here, lo yisparish, I don't know what it means. Elsewhere, this Gemara is brought Menachos, and Rashi translates it as balsam. The word stacked, it's actually a Greek word. It means like a resin or a balsam. So the Pashto, that's what it means. It means like, so like sort of like we have in the ingredients of the Ketores, we have tzori, which we have notif me'afzeh tuf, that comes from some kind of fragrant tree. So that may mean what it means over here. Anyway, Rabbi Yumi Ba'abo, I'm a shemen zayis shalahevi shlish. Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba says that Shemen Amur is olive oil, is oil from olives that have not grown one third of their growth. So just like we said before about grains, yes, didn't yet grow one third, and they used it to make the Samilam Shatabachim, the same way we hear these very unripe olives, the oil from them is very good for your skin. Tanya, we learn in a Blaise, Rabbi Yehuda, and Kiknin, Shemen Zayis Shalahevi Shlish. Rabbi Yehuda says, there's a Mishnah in Menachos that says you're not allowed to use Antiknin for the Korbanos Mincha. So what is the definition of Antiknin? He says it's Shemen Zayis Shalahevi Shlish. This stuff, all oil from olives that have not yet grown one third of their growth. The Lama Sochinoi, sorry. So why would you smear your skin with that? Because it takes off unwanted hair and it makes the skin softer. So therefore, so that's the idea. In other words, that we're saying, so the girls that were brought for Ahasuerus' beauty contest were treated with Shemen Amur, which again, we said is either stacked or Shemen Zayis Shalahevi Shlish. And the point is, it helped soften their skin and remove any unwanted hair. So the same thing we're saying that girls who have unwanted hair use one of these things. So the point is, we said that the Bnei Sashirim are using flour, and flour is chametz. So therefore, so again, we said before, they leave some of it over for the Bnei Saniyim. So again, one possibility is, as Tosfos said, before we were talking about what they use on their face, and here we're talking about what they use on their lower parts, which therefore only Rabbi Eliezer says is a problem. The Chachamim would say it's not a problem because it's so mystic that it can't be considered chametz anymore. Or the other possibility is, again, another possibility is that before we're talking about it's mostly soulless, and here we're talking about by the time they leave some of it over, my phone battery's low, that's all. By the time the Aniyim got a hold of it, they mixed it with a lot of sid, with a lot of plaster, so it's only Tarubas Chometz rather than when the rich girls are using it, it's Chometz Bain. Okay. And we'll continue on this topic about these various kinds of Chometz, about, again, we have Chometz Gomer versus Chometz Nukshta versus Chometz Ayudit Tarubas, etc. So we're going to continue with more discussion about that tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
Is it going to get later on if it's Roy Lachilah Kelev for that?
I think we're going to talk about, we may talk about here and there about Roy Lachilah Kelev, I'm not sure. But yeah, I think that factor is going to come in at some point, yeah. Okay. Shreyach, everyone. No.